Chapter 5. The Five Noble Orders. The sun was shining. Kofi felt none of its warmth. She walked through Thornkeep's halls softly, as though trying not to wake them. Ahead of her, McKenna's steps offset her own, and together they created a perfect cadence in the silence. Kofi wished there was more sound. This quiet gave her too much time to reflect. Too long an opportunity to mentally revisit all she'd seen in the last hour. Each stride carried her away from the main hall, but when she closed her eyes, she found herself right back in it, watching everything unfold again in excruciating detail. She saw the Darajas gathered in their colors, remembered the way they'd looked at her. The emotions on their faces had ranged from fear to wariness to outright intrigue. The last of those made her more than a little uncomfortable. She remembered one of those Darajas, the girl in the green tunic, the one who'd presented her with Fedu's horrible roses. It was all too easy to recall the instant terror that had filled that girl's eyes, as Fedu had dangled her by her braids just because he could. He had resorted to violence with an inhuman kind of apathy, a well-practiced ease. Each time she thought of it, her stomach turned. You are a dull knife, but fear not, I will see you sharpened. Fedu's promise repeated itself in her mind, playing over and over like a street fiddler's tune. Each time Kofi thought of those words, of the implication behind them, a new shiver crawled over her skin. She'd seen and heard so many terrible things in the course of an hour, but there was still one more that sent a fresh chill up her spine. A face. She'd just seen a face in the Mistwood. At least, she thought she had. It had vanished as quickly as it had appeared. Kofi tried her best to reconstruct the image. She thought she'd seen an oblong shape between the gnarled trees, a shape the same whitish color as the mist, but distinct. From the window, it had been too far away to know for sure. But she thought she'd seen what looked vaguely like eyes, too, a crude slash in place of where a mouth might have been. It had been visible for only a second, too briefly to discern whether it had belonged to a man, woman, or child. The longer Kofi considered it, the less certain she was that what she'd seen had even been a face at all. Her gaze cut to McKenna again, still walking a few steps ahead. For a moment, she considered asking the girl if she'd seen the face too, but no. Kofi stopped herself, deciding against it. There was no way to definitively prove she'd actually seen a face in the Mistwood. No way to know if it hadn't simply been a manifestation of exhaustion. In one morning here, she'd already been made into an anomaly. Fedu had told every Daraja in the main hall that she was their chosen one. No need to add kindling to that fire by pointing out one more thing that might make her different. When they reached the bedchamber, McKenna entered first. Kofi stood at its entrance, watching as the girl settled on the divan in the room's corner, neatly tucking her legs beneath her yellow dress. There was a natural grace about her Kofi knew she herself would never have. Her eyes panned the rest of the chamber. The tray of food from before was still on the nightstand beside the bed. And this time, when Kofi looked at it, she couldn't stop her stomach from audible rumbling. McKenna looked up. You should eat. Kofi considered refusing. She desperately wanted some sense of control in this strange place, even if it was in what and when she ate. But her body had no reserve of energy left for rebellion. The adrenaline that had coursed through her body in the main hall was gone, leaving in its wake fatigue and hunger. It occurred to Kofi now that she had no idea when she'd last eaten. She sighed, defeated, and walked across the room to sit on the bed's edge. After a very quick deliberation, she plucked a slice of bread from the tray. Her mouth watered as she devoured it, and in a moment of vulnerability, she closed her eyes. The face from the Mistwood gave way, yielding so that others filled her mind in its place. She saw Mama's face, then Jabir's, then Ekans. A stab of pain lanced through her body as she remembered what he'd looked like the last time she'd seen him, on the ground, and in excruciating pain. She had no idea what had happened to him. No idea if he, Mama, or Jabir were all right. A sudden stinging filled her eyes, and she screwed them shut until it went away. Kofi? At once, Kofi opened her eyes again. McKenna was still sitting on the divan, watching her. Are you okay? Are you okay? Kofi didn't know how to answer that question. She knew she wasn't, but saying so would require her to untangle a snarl of emotions she wasn't quite ready to face. The idea of doing something like that right now made her brain hurt, so instead, she deflected with her own question. McKenna, can I ask you something? From her spot on the divan, McKenna sat up straighter. Of course. Why did you come here? Kofi hadn't meant to ask so bluntly, but once asked, the words tumbled from her in a rush. I mean, you, Zane, those Darajas in the main hall, you all have to know Fedu's whole speech about a better world is a lie. How did he convince you to come to this place? Kofi watched as slowly something slipped from the girl's face. When she spoke, her voice was different. The cheer was gone, replaced by something frail. Fedu didn't convince any of us to come here, she whispered. And believe me, plenty of us don't support the things he wants to do. Kofi frowned. Whatever she'd been expecting to hear, this wasn't it. I don't understand. McKenna's face changed again. This time, the frailty was replaced with anger. He stole us from our homes, she said through her teeth, strained. All of us, one by one. This place, Thornkeep, is no haven. It's a prison. A place for Fedu to keep Darajas whose affinities interest him. All of us are part of his collection. Kofi felt suddenly sick. He did tell one truth in the main hall, McKenna went on bitterly. He does test each Daraja that he brings here. We've all been evaluated to determine if we were strong enough to help. None of us were, until you. She threw Kofi a sidelong glance. You must have really impressed him. Kofi made herself breathe. In a rush, everything that had happened in the Sky Garden flooded her memory, washing over her in a deluge. I didn't impress him, she said quietly, but there was another Daraja who did. Her name was Adia. He really wanted to use her power. Saying the words made Kofi shudder, but she didn't want to. She resisted for a long time, and in the end, I took the splendor she was holding in her body so that he couldn't hurt her anymore. She sagged a little on the bed. So he took me instead. McKenna's eyes widened. For several seconds, she seemed at a loss for words. That was really selfless of you. Kofi dropped her gaze. To someone else, perhaps what she had done for Adia seemed selfless. But the word made her uncomfortable. Could she call what she'd done truly selfless if a part of her regretted it? She wasn't sure. When she looked up, McKenna was still looking at her, though with new appreciation in her eyes. I made assumptions about you, she murmured after a moment. I'm sorry. It's okay. I did too, said Kofi. It was surprisingly nice to say it aloud. About you, about Zane. McKenna rolled her eyes. Most of the assumptions you made about Zane are probably true, she said, with all the exasperation a sister might have for an annoying brother. She crossed the room so that she was sitting on the bed. So, what's your order anyway? She asked, returning to her cheery disposition. When Fedu brings in a new Daraja, he usually announces their order in the main hall, but he didn't share yours. Kofi frowned. This was the second time McKenna had asked about her order, and she understood the question no more now than she had before. She shrugged. I don't know what you mean, she said honestly. McKenna's brows knitted, a perfect mirror of the confusion Kofi was sure she had on her own face. "You don't know your order?" Kofi shook her head. McKenna probably didn't mean it, but she was making her feel increasingly more awkward. "But how could you—" "Oh." A look of understanding dawned on McKenna's face. "Now that makes sense."
"What?"
"When Fedu asked me to make your dress," she said, nodding to Kofi's garment, "he specifically asked me to pick a fabric without colors."
McKenna seemed to be getting at something, but Kofi was more confused than ever. "Why would the colors of my clothes matter?"
McKenna cocked a brow. "Didn't you notice that the Durajas in the main hall were all standing together based on the color of their clothes?"
Kofi nodded.
"It's because traditionally, Durajas are grouped together based on their affinity. Those groups are collectively called the Five Noble Orders." She used her fingers to tick them off. "Order of Akile, Order of Mwili, Order of Kumpambana, Order of Maisha."
"Which order are you in?" Kofi asked, interrupting.
"Order of Yufundi," said McKenna with a smile. "Durajas like me make things, though our talents can vary. For example, my obvious specialty is in creating beautiful gowns."
She brushed her shoulders.
"But there are other Durajas in my order who can cook, paint, build things. Some even know how to make weapons."
She pinched at her own dress.
"We wear yellow. Order of Akile, that is, the Order of the Mind, wears blue, which is why you saw Zane wearing it."
Kofi nodded.
"So Fedu told you to make a dress for me without colors.
Why?"
She was dreading the answer to that question, but she knew she had to ask it.
McKenna faltered.
"Historically, a Duraja without colors doesn't have a specific affinity," she said.
Kofi's stomach dropped, but she kept her voice even. "How common is that?"
"Not very."
McKenna sounded uncomfortable.
"Usually it happens when a Duraja comes into their power late, sort of like when a child's growth is stunted early on."
She gave Kofi an apologetic look.
"Did your parents not tell you any of this?"
Kofi dropped her gaze again, glad the heat in her cheeks didn't show. She knew the sudden wave of shame she felt was unfounded, but she still felt it. Not for the first time, a single unanswered question pricked at her side. Why hadn't Mama told her that she was a Duraja? Why had she kept all of this from her?
"No," Kofi finally said. "They didn't."
McKenna paused, then,
"It's okay. You're not the first Duraja not to have an official affinity. You won't be the last. The specific nature of your power isn't as important as what you do with it."
They were simple words, but kind. Kofi looked at McKenna then, abruptly overwhelmed. She drew her knees to her chest, and McKenna seemed to understand that this particular moment called for quiet. Neither one of them spoke. Kofi let her gaze wander to the bedroom window. Without anyone standing there, she could see most of a garden below. The majority of its flowers were yellow. She stood, moving closer to the window to get a better view. The sun was much higher in the sky than before, shining golden light onto the flowers and neatly manicured grass. She looked toward the back of the lawns and noted the mistwood. It appeared just as it had before, an opaque white wall of curling tendrils and fog, but in this light, it seemed less ominous.
"McKenna," she asked, "if the mistwood's the only thing keeping the Durajas at Thornkeep, why hasn't anyone tried to leave it?"
McKenna's gaze darkened.
"They have tried."
Kofi waited for her to say more, but abruptly McKenna rose.
"We should get going," she said. "Your first lesson is in the South Garden, and we don't want to be late."
Kofi didn't ask McKenna about the mistwood again. She'd had every intention to at first, tried to find opportunities to bring it up as they made their way out of Thornkeep and onto its south lawns. But once they were outside, thoughts of mistwood were forgotten. She turned and took in Thornkeep in its entirety for the first time. It was a great, hulking sort of building. Something about its black stones and many towers reminded her of a cross between a temple and a fortress. Perhaps that was appropriate. She took several steps back and looked up, trying to take in the very scope of it. Thornkeep was bigger even than the Temple of Lycosa, and she couldn't help but be a little impressed by it. Imagine having phenomenal cosmic power and choosing to live in this. McKenna threw a nasty look at the building, as though it had done something distasteful. You don't like it? Kofi asked.
It's gauche, said McKenna.
She wrinkled her nose.
I mean, gods, you've got the continent's most talented Dorajas on the property, and nobody helped with the decor? Couldn't be me.
Kofi laughed. Do they make nice houses where you're from? McKenna smirked, as though enjoying some sort of joke.
Yes and no. My people are travelers. Our whole life fits in a wagon.
She nodded to Kofi.
What about you? Where are you from?
Lycosa, said Kofi, and she was surprised by how much it hurt to say her city's name.
I miss it.
McKenna nodded with some sympathy before they continued on. When they finally reached the South Garden, distinguishable by its white flowers, Kofi saw a girl was already there, waiting. Like McKenna and Zane, she looked to be about 16. She was tall, with brown skin and long black Fulani braids styled with knife-sharp precision. She wore a sleeveless purple tunic, and Kofi noted her bare arms were muscled. Every inch of the girl exuded power, strength, confidence. She nodded at them both as they approached.
Kofi, this is Najeri, said McKenna. She's in the Order of Kumpambana, the Order of Combat.
Nice to meet you. Najeri offered a hand. Her alto voice was accented, and Kofi placed it.
You're from the Baridi region, in the north.
Surprise flickered across Najiri's face.
I am. Have you been? No,
Kofi cringed. I just had an unfortunate experience with the Baridian merchant and his wife once.
Really?
Najeri looked genuinely interested.
It's not a great story, said Kofi quickly, and it ended with a lot of trouble.
I like trouble, said Najeri with a wink. It can be fun. She exchanged a coy look with McKenna that Kofi didn't understand.
I think I've got it from here.
I'm sure you do. McKenna smiled at them both before turning to Kofi. I'll come back for you in a bit, she said. Just meet me here.
Okay.
When she was gone, Najeri turned to Kofi.
So, she said ruefully, do you know how to fight?
Yes. Kofi immediately regretted saying that. She'd learned exactly one move from Ekon in the greater jungle, and even her execution of that had been iffy. While they'd trained, Badwa had tried showing her some basic maneuvers with the Splendor, but that hardly counted as real training. She started to clarify herself, but it was too late. Najeri was already beaming.
Great, so we can skip the basics and get straight into some sparring exercises.
She sounded entirely too excited as she picked up the two staffs on the ground.
We're going to play a game I like to call skins.
Kofi tensed. That didn't sound fun at all.
The goal is for us to practice defensive and offensive movement, she explained. We're both going to try to hit each other while also blocking the other's moves. The person whose staff hits skin first wins the bout.
Kofi hesitated. No offense, but how does this help me figure out my affinity?
Najeri grinned. When Dorajas in my order summon the Splendor, it manifests when we fight, in our hands, feet, weapons, etc. As you try to block my hits and land your own, try to summon and direct the Splendor into the staff. If you're in the Order of Kumpambana, that should feel pretty natural.
Kofi tried not to grimace. Absolutely nothing about this felt natural.
We'll do best 3 out of 5, okay?
Kofi nodded, taking the staff from Najeri. Its wood was a deep reddish brown, and it was heavy despite its slender cut.
We'll start easy to warm up, said Najeri. On my count. 1, 2, 3. Kofi sucked in a breath as Najiri charged forward, much faster than she'd anticipated. She brought her staff down, and Kofi thought she saw tiny golden speckles of light, the splendor, near the business end. She tried to jump out of the way, but it was too late. The staff's tip smacked her shoulder, hard. Pain ricocheted down Kofi's arm.
"I win," said Najiri brightly. "Let's go again."
Their second and third bouts ended the same way as the first. Kofi gritted her teeth. She'd tried to summon the splendor, tried to draw it into the staff as she moved, but it was to no avail. Najiri, meanwhile, was fast, strong, and seemed to specialize in finding an opponent's weak points to exploit them. Kofi doubted even a son of the six would fare well against her in a fight.
"Maybe we should try something else," said Najiri after the fourth bout.
It had ended with her putting Kofi on her back, and there was a bit of pity in her voice now.
"No," Kofi shook her head. "We have one more bout. Let's finish it."
Najiri's brow rose, clearly hesitant, but after a moment she inclined her head and stepped back.
"All right, positions."
Kofi ignored the pain in her arms and legs as she stood and raised her staff. The last few bouts hadn't ended well for her, but they hadn't been a complete waste. She'd been taking mental notes. Najiri was tall, and her long arms gave her more reach. Kofi took a deep breath as they circled each other and tried to imagine what Ekon might say if he was here. "Watch for patterns. Watch for weaknesses." Najiri shifted her weight from foot to foot, as though dancing to an inaudible song. She'd done it each time they began, and Kofi realized she was trying to figure out which direction to move in. An idea came to her. She didn't know if she could pull it off, but she could try. "She feels bad for you, thinks you're weak," pretend Ekon's voice said. "That's an advantage you can exploit." Kofi leaned left and watched Njiri's eyes follow the movement like a cat watching a mouse. This time, she moved first, stepping left, then quickly changing course. Najiri fell for it. The girl lunged just as Kofi veered away so that she only swung at air. At the same time, Kofi planted her foot and spun, trying to recall everything Ekon had taught her about the Dwara. Her execution wasn't flawless, but her arm cut through the air in a perfect arc and smacked against Najiri's rib, hard. The girl cried out in surprise and made to strike back, but Kofi quickly backed away.
"My bout."
Najiri grinned.
"Nice move."
She smirked. "I've heard you're good with butter knives, too." Kofi grimaced, the joy of her victory slightly sullied. She didn't know if and when she would see Zane again, but she made a mental note to give him a good kick the next time she did.
"I think we can call it a day," said Najiri.
"What? But I thought we were just warming up." Kofi surprised herself saying the words. The truth was, while she hadn't necessarily enjoyed sparring with Najiri, it had felt good to move, to do something that made her feel like she was at least in control of herself. Najiri shook her head.
"Best not to overdo it," she said. "We'll train again another time."
She nodded to Thornkeep. "Want me to walk you back inside?"
"No," said Kofi quickly. "I'll stay here and wait for McKenna. Maybe look around a bit."
"Okay," Najiri nodded. "I'll see you around then. It was nice to meet you." Kofi watched Najiri head down one of the South Garden stone paths, realizing once she was gone that, for the first time since she'd woken up, she was alone. She took in the garden around her slowly. There were clusters of white daisies arranged sporadically near stone benches, blooming dahlias and bunches of baby's breath. Every flower within reach was white. She looked past them and noticed something else, the mistwood. It was several yards away, but even from this distance, she could see that the acacia trees were much taller than she'd first imagined. Even the smallest among them was twice her size. Her eyes traced along their trunks, which were gray like ash, and the thorns that protruded from their gnarly branches, the color of bone. Even the grass at the tree's roots had a brittle, deadened look about it. McKenna's words came back to her. "They have tried." Kofi reflected on those words.
If Darajas had tried to leave Thornkeep without success, what had stopped them? She looked toward the Mistwood again. Its telltale mist seemed less opaque from here. She could make out the start of the trees within. She felt a brush by her ear and jumped, startled. But it was only two birds with wings the color of the sky. They fluttered past her, twirling together in the air, before flying toward the Mistwood and disappearing into its fog. Kofi steeled herself. Her feet seemed to move of their own accord as she began to walk closer to the wood's edge. With each step, she expected someone to stop her, but the garden was empty, and no one did. Her heartbeat quickened as the looming trees seemed to grow taller right before her eyes, alongside in anticipation. She stopped again, now only a few feet from the trees, and drew in a breath. A quiet fell over everything as Kofi extended her hand, letting the mist's curling tendrils wrap around her fingers in ribbons of white. They were silken to the touch, soft, as the cool mist encircled her wrist. A smell like freesia suffused the air, and she breathed in, feeling an odd sense of calm.
Kofi!
A voice cracked through the silence like the snap of a dry branch, ripping Kofi from that calm. She turned in time to see McKenna racing toward her. Her eyes were wild with terror.
Get away from it! She screamed. Get away before it!
Kofi turned back to the mist, but it was too late. The curling tendrils of mist that had encircled her wrist turned ice cold, constricting. She tried to pull away, but like fingers, the mist fettered around her wrists. She felt hands snatching at her ankles, her dress, her hair, each touch chilling her blood. Panic clawed its way through her as she thrashed, trying to free herself to no avail. It was clear now. The Mistwood was pulling her in.
Kofi, hold on!
Warm arms wrapped tight around her waist, tugging her away from the trees. McKenna. She heard the strain as the girl pulled with all her might, pulled until Kofi's arms felt as though they might be ripped away. A dull roar filled her ears. The chill in her arms was snaking through her body now, and it was getting harder and harder to fight the Mistwood's pull.
No!
McKenna screamed again, and there was a desperation in her voice. Kofi felt it happen all at once, in a kind of slow motion. McKenna turned her body so that both of their sides were facing the Mistwood. Kofi's eyes squeezed shut as a sudden blast of its cold air grazed her cheek. There was a pause, and she felt the mist's grip on her arm loosen at the same time McKenna's did. Kofi opened her eyes, relieved for only a second, before she was doused in a new horror. The mist had taken hold of McKenna. Kofi commanded her body to move, but it wouldn't listen. She could only watch as sinuous ropes of translucent white wrapped around McKenna's body, like vines, like snakes. She saw the raw fear in McKenna's eyes, the tears.
Kofi!
Her voice was tight and strangled.
Help me!
Kofi made to grab at her, but it was too late. She could only watch as the mist dragged McKenna into the woods and out of sight.